this afternoon, the President of the Senate, Senator Durfer, and we'll be looking at a couple of bills that he's brought forward for our consideration. Let Jan give us the background on Senate Bill 1. I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, before you is Senate Bill 1 at the request of President Durfer. This would designate the governor as the superintendent of public instruction upon the expiration of the current superintendent's term, and then it is expected that the governor would then appoint a designee to fulfill that function. This bill has come up in the past a couple of times, the last two sessions, and it is in the Constitution, but a 1997 Department of Justice opinion has ruled that as long as the governor is named superintendent, it is constitutional. And I have included a copy of that opinion for your reference.
Thank you, Jan. Senator Durfer.
Well, thank you very much for allowing me to testify. And Jan is right, this is the third time, maybe it's a charm, I don't know. This is an issue that I know the governor tried to also encourage people to take a look at. And I think that if you look at the history of what's taken place, since Measure 5, 57% of our budget is now education. 43% of our overall budget is K through 12. And for me, it doesn't make sense when you're holding the governor responsible for how he runs the executive department to have that larger portion of his budget outside of his control. Now, presently, obviously, with our present superintendent of public instruction, the governor, they get along quite well. I don't know if you can imagine what would happen if we had a couple that didn't get along. But that could happen very much, very easily, I believe. And so I just feel that if you're going to hold somebody responsible, you ought to have the control of who's there to make the decisions. I know that some people feel that we should go out for a vote of the people. I know that's what Senator Duncan feels, and I can understand how he feels that way. I think it's perfectly viable, and it's within the law for us to appoint the governor as superintendent of public instruction, and he can then appoint someone to represent him in that issue. As long as that's such a large part of his budget, I think he ought to have the ability to control it. And I don't think it's Republican, Democrat. That's not something that's an issue to me. I think that's kind of where I stand on it. So I'd open it up for questions if you have any thoughts on it.
Any questions from the committee?
Again, I think it's because it's changed. You know, what used to be a few years ago, we were paying 25% of the cost of schools and taxpayers 75%. I can understand why you want a different person at that point. Today, it's just reversed of that. And I think we're paying probably 70% of the K through 12 budget out of general fund dollars, which the legislature and the executive department controls.
Thank you. Senator Decker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one real quick question. In terms of, is there efficiencies or dollar savings that we would enjoy if the governor appointed the superintendent of schools?
I don't believe so unless we can cut Stan's salary, and I don't think he'd let us do that. I don't know that you would gain any efficiencies, but I think that you would, again, like I say, when if you had the responsibility of running an education system, but you couldn't control the budget, how could I hold you responsible? And I also, again, not to point fingers at Stan, but I don't think sometimes we always elect the best administrators. I think that the governor could appoint someone who is a real advocate for education, and the Senate does confirm it, which does give it some control. But I just feel that since we've changed how we fund education, we've got to change this, who controls it.
Are there further questions? Senator Hartung.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Durfer, I really appreciate you bringing this before this committee for discussion. I don't know how the bill will end up exactly, but I'm reminded of the fact, as you stated, how much things have changed in education, particularly during this last presidential campaign. Both candidates, you know, emphasized education. Education's the answer, and that's what I say. And so it's appropriate, I think, for us, this legislature, all 90 of us, to take a close look at how we are managing and how we are running, you know, the system of education, how we can improve on the quality of education. So I do thank you for introducing this.
Okay.
Any other questions? Would you care to comment on your other bill at this time?
If I might, if you want to
hearing audience, recess our hearing on Senate Bill 1 and open a hearing on Senate Bill 5.
Again, I appreciate you taking the time to listen to me on this issue. This issue, as many of you know, I have a daughter and son-in-law that teach schools, and my wife also taught, although she hasn't taught in recent times, and I think times have changed a lot for teachers. And I believe right now that teachers live under a threat, and like my daughter says, the kids will come up and say, "I dare you to do that. If you do, I'll sue you." And she's had parents tell her the same thing. And the problem you have with it is that the teacher is then responsible to defend themselves. And there have been teachers that have had to hire attorneys and defend themselves through the suit process. Again, I don't think teachers all have to live under that that cloud. That it's hard enough to teach today without being threatened by kids that or parents that you're going to get sued all the time. And so I believe that as long as a teacher is following the rules, and I think the school board needs to set up the rules of discipline within the school, as long as the teacher is following those rules, that they should not be subject to being sued. That's the way I brought it to forward. And again, I would like to see it pass. It's not something that's a heartburn for me, but I think it's, again, the right thing to do.
Have you seen the proposed amendments?
Yes, I think it's where the loser pays, and right. I don't have a problem with that if that's something that this committee would agree to.
Are there other questions of the senator?
I have not seen the proposed amendments, Mr. Chair. Are those available to the...
I trust this.
One amendment specifying any civil action based on tort against an officer, employee, or agent of the school district or public charter school. The court shall award reasonable attorney's fees incurred by that officer or employee or agent in the action if the officer, employee, or agent is prevailing party in the action. The action arises out of discipling of a student and the officer, employer, agent is acting within the scope of the individual's employment and duties.
Again, I think that this committee can discuss that, pros and cons, and I have a lot of confidence in this group that we've come to the right decision on it.
Appreciate that very much. Further questions? Not.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
At this point, we're going to close the hearing on Senate Bill 5 and reopen the hearing on Senate Bill 1. And let ask Stan and Senator Duncan to come up.
I don't want to pick any of your fingers, Stan. That's right. I defer to the superintendent.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm pleased to appear before you today and give a contrasting view to the view Senator Gerfler was able to give you on Senate Bill 1.
Mr. Chair, does that also include protecting your salary?
Mr. Chair, I'd be glad to appear at another time and suggest some things around salaries of statewide elected officials. Since 1874, 1875, the superintendent of public instruction has been elected in Oregon. Education, as we all know, is and has been since before the formation of our state an absolutely crucial and high priority for citizens of Oregon. I believe, based on that, that they deserve direct access to a top leader in education. I think it's important that there be an independent, publicly elected superintendent of public instruction that focuses solely on education for our children and uses the office for the bully pulpit for education. Traditionally, historically in Oregon, the superintendent of public instruction has been largely bipartisan, though clearly those people have been Republicans or Democrats individually. They have worked hard to be bipartisan. I have a fear that an appointed superintendent could tend to be more partisan, focus on the partisan priorities as opposed to the educational priorities. Former President Jimmy Carter once said that it is absolutely critical that the person running for President of the United States be required to go through the deep primary process, to visit every nook and cranny of this country, to get a sense of what it's really about. I think the same is true of the superintendent of public instruction. The process that a campaign forces of being in every community, being in schools throughout the state, getting a deep sense of where the public is something that while an appointed superintendent would desire to do, I think is simply impossible without the requirement and criteria of a campaign. It also gives the opportunity for debate around educational issues, focus there, and clarification of those issues. Now, I think it's worth looking at just very briefly a bit of history. Historically, Oregonians were distrustful of centralized government. They created a board of control where the governor shared the power of running prisons and other things with the Secretary of State. That board of control was really the center of much of the historical power that the governor now has. They had a second tier of elected officers and developed the initiative and referendum. I think it was appropriate to move away from the Board of Control and a more centralized power role in the governor. But I think, frankly, that the voters have kept the best of sort of the independent powers. They have kept the auditing and elections process separate in the Secretary of State. They have kept the justice issues separate in the Attorney General through election. And they have kept the school focus to some degree separate through an elected superintendent of public instruction. And I think those are positive. One of the questions is, how does the current system work practically as opposed to the proposed system? And I would like to suggest this to you. The governor has extreme power over education by control of the budget. While we submitted the Department of Education a budget for education, the governor ultimately tells the Department of Education what occurs there. That occurs under an elected superintendent. It occurs under an appointed superintendent. So that power of the purse that Senator Durfler mentioned is there housed in the governor, regardless of the approach that you move forward with. I think that the difference is this. With an appointed superintendent, when the governor has 38 priorities to look at and has to balance those, the superintendent of public instruction ultimately, as an appointed official, has to say yes, sir, or yes, ma'am, to whatever is ultimately defined there. The elected superintendent has the ability and the freedom to continue dialoguing with the governor around a passion and priority for education that allows that direct access from an elected official, and I think that's positive. Paul LeMahieu, who was in 1996 the school chief from Delaware, now the superintendent of public instruction for Hawaii, did a study of appointed superintendents appointed by a board, appointed by the governor, and elected. And some of the issues that were reviewed is the amount of turnover, the satisfaction of customers with the work of those particular ones. And what was found in the study more than anything else is that the individuals that fill those slots, the governor's slot, the superintendent's slot, and the board slot, is the most important factor in how the working relationships occur, not the appointment or the election to that process. And I would suggest to you that the study also showed that the turnover is not as high in elected officials as superintendent as in some of the other. I have been in office just a little over 2 years, and I have now moved up to the 50% mark in seniority. 50% of the superintendents in the country are newer than I am with 2 years' service. One of the problems we have in this state and this country in schools is the turnover of superintendents in terms of stable policy. And I would suggest there's a benefit of having a superintendent that sticks around for 4, 6, or 8 years to actually work with policy. I want to suggest that the voters have made it pretty clear in their opinion, number one, that they want an elected superintendent, and number two, if that were going to change, that they want to vote on it. The Attorney General's opinion that was referenced indicating that the superintendent could be appointed references a 1959 Attorney General's opinion, which says this is a close call, whether the Constitution prohibits or allows it. Ultimately, the Attorney General's office recently determined that they believed it could be an appointed office. The voters in 1980, in a nearly 3-to-1 margin, said they absolutely did not want to change from an elected superintendent. In 1999, the last session of the legislature, an independent polling firm did a poll that showed that 65% of the voters opposed making an appointed superintendent, while 22 favored it, and 75% of the voters opposed making an appointed superintendent without a vote of the people, and 18% favored it. So I think that shows an overwhelming desire by the general public to maintain an elected superintendent of public instruction. I have to say that in my work and review of the efforts of superintendents of public instruction in this state, I've seen most of the progress our schools make be carried out by local schools and local school districts. But I have seen over the history of the work of elected superintendents a passion for higher standards in our schools, a commitment to greater quality, and an accomplishment of those goals in a way that I believe would not have been possible without an elected superintendent of public instruction, the visibility and the opportunity that that creates. I think you can get an absolutely qualified superintendent through election or appointment. I don't think that's an issue here, but I do think the voters' ability to connect with leadership at the education center is critically important. The Department of Education under elected superintendent also gives you an opportunity for coordinating leadership between the department, COSA, OEA, the school boards. We work closely in a collaborative way, and I think that is a positive process also. I have and will leave with you an op-ed piece that I did for the Oregonian that came out this morning that was a response to an editorial they did that just happened to be wrong, and I wanted to suggest changes there. I thank you very much for the opportunity to testify and would be glad to answer any questions.
Questions? Senator Hartek.
Stan, thank you very much for the service you've given. If you recall, you and I go back over 30 years when you were a student at Willamette. And so I have a question for you, and I agree with you that I think the people of the state like to elect their statewide officials. And I haven't run this by my colleague on your left there, but I'm really speaking for our former colleague and good friend, John Lynn. If we elected a lieutenant governor / superintendent, would that fill the bill for you?
Well, I think there are all kinds of versions of election you might look at, but I want to suggest this. I believe that education, just as justice, warrants a separate focus and a separate elected official. Senator Durfler mentioned that there's no cost difference, really, between an elected and appointed superintendent. So the question I ask is, what do we get in terms of visibility for education? What do we get in terms of advocacy for education, bully pulpit activity for education, of an appointed or an elected superintendent? And I just come out believing you get a much stronger approach if you focus just on education. So the lieutenant governor would water that down some.
Thank you.
Any further questions?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Gordley?
Thank you very much, and good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
The Hawaii study that you referenced, did that study also look at this issue of how the person who is elected or appointed carries out that advocacy role and the quality of that advocacy role, whether it's elected, appointed? You're focusing a lot on visibility, advocacy, and use of the office for the bully pulpit. I'm just trying to get a sense of what the Hawaii study revealed about that particular piece.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, it was actually, just to clarify, a Delaware study done by the now current superintendent of Hawaii, and it did focus on the satisfaction levels of various groups that work with superintendents of public instruction, and in that sense, how they carry out the advocacy, and found that elected superintendents compared favorably with others. Does that...
Mm-hmm.
I'll provide a copy of the study to you also. It's a little bit technical, but...
I would like to
see
this.
Okay, I'll be sure.
Thank you.
Senator Decker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Superintendent Bond. My question is, are you aware of other states that have made the change? And if so, and I'm not aware, what has their experience been at either making the change one way or making the change the other to elected?
Various states have tinkered over time. Florida was the most recent under the proposals of Governor Jeb Bush to create a much greater power in the governor and centralized activity, and the elected superintendent of public instruction was eliminated there, and their experience level at this point is too new to know the result. And other states have tinkered back and forth various directions, and the result is really to a large degree, except for the one study I mentioned, in the eye of the beholder as to what the result might be. There are charges that where you have elected boards of education, that you don't have sufficient visibility for those boards, and then they appoint a superintendent.
Mm-hmm.
So there are arguments all over the board on these things, and so there isn't any, except for the one I mentioned that I know of, definitive study that would give you specific results from each of these. Most of the elected superintendents come from the western states. Seems to be a much stronger tradition here in the West, with California, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Montana, Arizona, much clustered around the West.
How many are elected?
There are, if I recall correctly, 13 elected, and then the rest are largely evenly split between appointment by the governor or appointment by a state board.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Well, committee members got my question. I, understanding that the majority of states don't have elected superintendents, their experience, as you have indicated, is not uniform, but at least they're performing adequately, and most have seem to be getting the job done. I thank you. And we'll hear from Senator Duncan. He's former superintendent of public instruction, now state senator. Got a world of experience and
bias.
And bias.
And bias. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Superintendent Bunn. By the way, you know, I do this under great trepidation with all due respect to my president. You know, you don't like to take on your president's bill, but, you know, he and I talked about this, and he knows where I stand, and so I'm very comfortable in bringing out my point of view. Now, I'm here today not really to argue the elected versus the appointed. And that's an argument that goes on and will continue to go on. I don't know the answer to that one. I have to tell you that when I was in the Idaho legislature, I carried the bill to make it appointed in Idaho, and I lost on that particular issue over there. In fact, it was one of my favorite doctoral exam questions too. My students in graduate school set up a state structure and what's the best system. And you can argue any point of view on that. I guess the thing that bothers me particularly about the bill that's before you is the approach. Again, I'm not arguing elected or appointed, but you're trying to make the governor the state superintendent of public instruction. Now, we know, you know, the governor really has no time to be the superintendent of public instruction. You're going to give a title to an individual, a title. And obviously a governor can be very supportive of education, it can be a priority, but the governor, can you imagine other agencies within the state, how they would be furious if the governor really took on the role of being the superintendent of public instruction, because if he were to, or she were to do so, they would be neglecting the human services, the corrections, public safety, all of those other concerns that we have before us. So the irony of having the governor be the superintendent really is not going to happen, whatever you do with titles or whatever gamesmanship we play with the statute. That won't happen. The idea that you put a deputy in charge to run the department, well, that's a misnomer when you really understand the role that happens. Running the department, in fact, most of us who have been the superintendent, and I stand to, you have a deputy who runs a lot of the day-to-day operation, the things that go on in the department. It's not that that the superintendent does. You really are involved in many, many educational issues around the state, within school districts, and conflicts, and all sorts of things that go on in education. So the idea of a deputy running the department, we do that now. But in the other role, this deputy is supposed to be in charge of things. Let's face it, with all due respect to the role of a deputy, people want to talk to the head person. Now, can you imagine just getting to the governor to deal with all of the issues that come up from education where people won't talk to the head person? It will not happen. Now, I can give you a little bit of history quickly. I'm sorry to be a history teacher, but I do know a little bit about the history of how this all happened. If you look at the Constitution of Oregon, it makes reference to the fact that the governor shall be the superintendent of public instruction for a period of 5 years, after which it shall be incumbent upon the legislative assembly to call for the election of a superintendent. And that was done, if you go back and read Carey's history of the Constitution, that was done because they were trying to find a way to make the salary of the governor attractive enough to get someone to be the governor. And so at first they were talking about making the governor the Secretary of State. And then they changed that and they talked about, well, now we'll have the governor be the state treasurer. They finally settled on the governor becoming the superintendent of public instruction. And they were able to combine the two salaries in attracting someone to become the first governor of the state of Oregon. And so it's all right in Carey's history of the Constitution. In fact, it happened in my office, if anybody would love to read the story. But anyhow, that's where the idea of the governor being the superintendent of instruction came about. And it was for about a period of 11 years, really, before they did finally call for the election of a superintendent. I guess I would ask you to think carefully about a measure, folks, that is just actually intended. My writer did not mean that, but the intent will be perceived as you are trying to deceive the people of this state. You're deceiving them. It's a sneaky way around it. Now, I don't know if it would pass. I guess it would have a difficult time passing because, as Senator Hartung says, it's difficult, Mr. Chair, to get people to give up the right to vote. But keep in mind, if we do this, and the people of Oregon will know it, I can assure you, they will know that this is a method that the legislature used to get around them, to deceive them into doing something that they did not want to have happen. So I would ask you to give very serious consideration of buying into a concept that is wrong, dead wrong, in dealing with the Constitution of the state of Oregon. And you and I have all been asked to uphold that Constitution. Thank you, Mr. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Fisher.
Yeah, I would like to ask my colleague out here, being a man of vast experience in these things, having, I believe, held that position in another state. Was that elected position in Idaho, or was that appointed?
Mr. Chair, no, I didn't hold that position. I served
legislator. Well, you've been acquainted with it, I'm sure.
Oh, very well acquainted. But remember, in that state, as a legislator, I carried the bill to try to make it appointed there. So my point is, I'm not arguing in that case. If you want to make it appointed, then be honest with the people and tell them you want them to vote aye or nay to make it appointed.
Further questions? I believe you've answered all the questions.
Certainly nice to see all of you folks. Enjoyed being with you.
Thank you very much. Are there other individuals who would like to testify? I believe we have no one else signed up to testify. We'll close the hearing on Senate Bill 1 and open the hearing on Senate Bill 5. Got no testimony on Senate Bill 5. The senator introduced that to us.
Does that mean we can go home early?
It looks like we're going to go home early. I am not prepared to move to work session on this bill without further testimony on it.
You have to post it, too, of course. That's going to have a work session.
The
24 hours.
Just public hearings today? Okay. I need to read my own notes. Since we have no one signed up for further testimony here, I'm going to inquire of some folks and committee members. Is there input from the committee on Senate Bill 5? This point,
Mr. Chair,
Senator Eckert,
you want?
I'm not on Senate Bill 5. I do have another thought on Senate Bill 1.
Okay.
My big question on Senate Bill 5, and I thought maybe testimony would get to this, is how big of an issue is this in Oregon? And so it'd be helpful for me to just get a sense of what is out there in terms of cases that would need a remedy such as Senate Bill 5 would provide. And so I don't know who might have that information, or, but I know that would be helpful for myself.
Well, I've had personally some testimony from Representative Krieger regarding the amendment that he brought forward and the circumstances that prompted him to bring that. Apparently, a constituent of his who was a teacher ask a student to sit down, and then asking, he also put his hand on his shoulder and was sued, spent thousands of dollars to defend himself, won the trial, had really tremendous support from classmates of the student whose parents brought the file, brought the suit against the teacher, and the teacher prevailed. Won the case, but was out thousands of dollars. And I have heard of other cases in talking with school disciplinarians as vice principals, where they have been either hailed into court or threatened with court action because of their treatment of students in the school. And I really think it's appropriate personally that teachers have some protection if they're following the district disciplinary regulations and are working within the prescribed boundaries of the disciplinary rules of the school district.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Fisher.
Where is the Oregon Education Association when something like that happens?
Did you, yes, would you please come up, Ari?
Good afternoon, Senator Starr and Senator Fisher and committee members. For the record, my name is Lori Wimmer Whalen with the Oregon Education Association. I'll be happy to respond to the question. We do provide counsel to our members as a part of the service we provide our members, and did in the case of Joel Cooper, who is the teacher you referred to so eloquently in your description.
Thank you. But not financial.
Mr. Chair, Senator Fisher, yes, we did. I think in that particular case, I'm fairly certain that we did provide the attorney. I can get back to you to verify that, but that's typically how we respond to these cases, if there is a case to protect them.
Okay, that wasn't clear to me in my discussion with Representative Krieger, but certainly would seem to be a function of the Education Association, all right, with their resources.
Certainly.
Further questions?
Well, Mr. Chair, I just put my question out there. How big of a, do we know? Do we have numbers as the Department of Education, or do you all have numbers in terms of how significant of an issue this is and how many lawsuits are in effect today?
Mr. Chair, Senator Deckard, I don't have that number for you today. I don't believe the reason we haven't brought forward a bill like this is that we did not perceive a need for it.
Thank you very much. That's a great help.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming forward. No further discussion. We will close the public hearing, and we will look forward to seeing you on Thursday.
Senator Gordley had something.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's quite all right. Actually, Lori Wimmer Whalen, she answered the question. My question was going to be, is the bill necessary? And she responded to that. But I do have another question about Senate Bill 1.
You want that on the record, or are we?
Are we out of?
No.
I didn't adjourn.
Okay.
No. You can go back into it. Gavel back into a public hearing on Senate Bill 1, and that was the matter before us.
I open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1, and Senator Gordley.
Thank you. On reflection of the testimony that we heard, what would be very helpful to me is to hear a more detailed description from proponents of exactly how this would work from the governor's office. So if the governor and if there's support there for the bill, I need to get a better sense of how's it going to work.
How's it going to work, and does the governor want this opportunity?
I'm assuming that a good number of people have given a great deal of thought to how it will work. And so I would like to hear more of that thinking on the record, as opposed to the generalities that we've heard and discussed today. This would be a major shift, and it just seems that we need a whole lot more clarity than we have right now.
I agree. Any other comments? Senator Fisher.
I would, on the Measure 5, I don't know, can I discuss if you're under public hearing on Measure 5? Get out of
the public hearing. Measure 1, on the public hearing on Measure 5.
Tennis match.
Well,
I'm going to go back to 5.
You know, without some of these things written into law, which have been brought up here, how many teachers are willing to stick their neck out and actually do some discipline? Because, again, going back to some of my comments in one of our previous meetings, I'm thinking that the lack of discipline and the lack of ability to discipline is a great reason why we're losing a lot of our good teachers, long-time teachers. They're sick and fed up with what they have to deal with, and they're afraid of going out and being the one that has to be the test case.
It's an interesting look at the same issue.
Mr. Chair, one of my first dealings with school situation in the political arena
happened in a district where some of the people in the district lived in my district, but were not, their school was not in my district. And you can have funny situations with our dividing lines of our different districts, whether they're political or whether they're school or other things. They requested that I come up and listen to a budget hearing. One of the things that was posed in the budget was $7,000 to repair the lockers on the walls of the school, to the classroom. The doors of the classrooms open right up between banks of these lockers as you went down the hall. Those lockers were torn from one end to the other, and they were the old style. I imagine they were around when you were a kid, because they haven't changed a whole lot in some cases. They're those old metal things that you can't even look at without it making a lot of noise. And those things were bent and beat and pushed. That doesn't happen without lots of noise coming with it. It was very evident that there wasn't a teacher up and down that hall that was willing to stick his nose out when he heard some of this going on and say something about it. And it put $7,000 out of the taxpayer's pocket, to my way of thinking, was a gross waste of money. They had a metal shop there. And as far as I was concerned, the students caught doing that kind of thing could jolly well go out to the metal shop in the course of their process. Instead of making something that they wanted to make for themselves, they could repair their locker that they had damaged. And that would take care of a lot of things, including the $7,000 that wasn't really needed to fix things that shouldn't have been needed to fix. But I'm sitting right there and I'm telling myself, under this day and age, because I'm not exactly geared that way, and I probably would go for a test case if I were a teacher, because I wouldn't put up with that kind of thing. If I heard that kind of thing happening out in the hall by my classroom or by even my neighbor's classroom down the hall, I'd be out there doing something about it. And I have a great feeling that teachers have let themselves get taken to the cleaners by legislation that has put them in a position where they no longer are willing to stick their neck out, because they know they'll get it cut off and they don't want to be the one that has that happen to them. And I would like very much to try to figure out some way that we could, and I don't care if we have to do what the television says and distort their features and stuff if they want to come here and testify or some other nature, and they want to keep it quiet and they're afraid to step up and do it in public. I'd like to really get behind the scenes on this and find out what the score is.
Well, I don't know how you do that unless you contact some of your teachers. But it appears that there's not a huge problem, according to the testimony. But we've had a hearing on this. I'll be willing to bring it back if there's other opportunity to expand our understanding on the issue. But at this point, I'm not real anxious to bring it back.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess
Senator Gordon.
You know, I'm just feeling a little dis-ease about where we are, because if looking at the background statement in the staff measure summary, it says there have been reports, plural, from some teachers, plural, and school administrators, plural, that students are not disciplined out of fear of lawsuits, etc. In order for that statement to be in the staff measure summary, it's got to be based on something. And so I just need to know, what is the something? Give me something to put my arm around here.
Well, we did hear from Senator Durfer that his daughter had brought this issue to him as one who is involved in public education.
That would be one example, though, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. I understand.
And again, I'm just reflecting on what's actually in the background statement. And
sure. And we'll explore that further.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll give him the plural, because I've sure been talked to more than once about these very issues. And I'm going to go to bat and see. I don't lightly drag somebody up here 150 miles to testify, but I wouldn't be surprised what I could get at least one or two people up here to testify on that.
Be worthwhile. Senator Decker?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one thought. Maybe we could, just to see, rather than just get anecdotal evidence here and there, is maybe the department, and I don't see the department still here, but they are here.
Yeah.
Terrific. Maybe they would be able to do a survey or take a look and at least check in with some a representative sample of some school districts and see just how large of an issue this is out there. They should...
I knew I shouldn't have sat in the front row. For the record, I'm Kate Dixon and Deputy Superintendent of Public Instruction. And Mr. Chair, Senator Deckert, I will check with some of our folks that keep the data to see what kind of information we currently have and how we might try to provide more information on it. I also think that we could probably work with legislative counsel in understanding what laws are already on the books for school districts in relationship to the protection for teachers and administrators in discipline matters. So I think there's a couple points that we could perhaps help just providing some context and background information, and be happy to do that.
Thank you very much, Kate. That would be very helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
An announcement after you get us out of five.
Right. We're going to close up the hearing on Senate Bill 5.
I wanted to remind you and the members that Senators Duncan and Metzger have invited us to the Sabin Skill Center this Friday, and there'll be transportation leaving the Capitol at 8 o'clock Friday morning, and take about an hour to get there, so we'll have an hour at the Sabin Skill Center and be back by 11 o'clock for session. And the if you haven't been to the Sabin Skill Center, it certainly is worthwhile. And as you know, the governor made a rather large reduction in their budgeting, and there's some opportunities to do some other things.
It is a very informative site to visit, and one in which we have some decisions to make about the future of that center. So would encourage those who haven't been and who don't understand the importance of that center to take advantage of that trip on Friday morning.
And please notify Senator Duncan's office if you're going. Notify him both ways. You can't go or you are going.
Okay. Very good. Anything else come before us today? If not, we will adjourn the Committee on Education. Thank you very much. Hey.